Skyline's new chicken chili is here. Now you can enjoy that legendary Skyline taste with a new protein option. Try Skyline's chicken chili on Waze, Coney's, and all your Skyline favorites. Feeling good. It's Skyline time.
And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Hello. Today is Wednesday, February 8th. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Gino. I'm here with Darren and Kevin. You can listen to us anywhere you get your podcast. Please like and subscribe. Follow us on Facebook. Send us some posts and thoughts and questions. Guys, how are you doing today?
Doing good.
Good.
It's Super Bowl week.
Super Bowl week. Super Bowl Sunday, number 57, is in 4 days. At the moment, the Eagles are holding as a 1.5-point favorite over the Kansas City Chiefs. I'll throw a couple of interesting notes to you guys, and then we'll talk about some stuff. We got some interesting storylines with this Super Bowl. We got Andy Reid versus his former team, the Eagles. We got Mahomes versus Hurts. First time we have two African-American quarterbacks playing in the Super Bowl. Two great quarterbacks, by the way. We got the Kelce versus Kelce story, Jason. And the big tight end,
Travis.
And for the one of these
the teams, assist.
One of these teams is going to have their second title. For Philadelphia, it would be their second title in 6 years. The last one was 2018. If the Chiefs win, it would be their second title in 4 years. The 2020 win over the San Francisco 49ers.
But it'll be their third title, though, G. They did win one in 1970.
No, I know, but in the recent.
In the recent, okay.
For me, I'm rooting for the Eagles. That was my preseason pick, so I'm going to keep on them. Let's talk about some of this game, guys. Darren, want to start us off?
Sure. Okay, a few things. Eagles have been the best team in the league all year, I think. I don't think it's very difficult to argue with that. They only lost one game that Hurts started. They lost two at Minshew, just to put it that way. Mahomes is an underdog for the first time in a playoff game ever. He has never been an underdog. And the Chiefs have been here three times in four games. Keys to the game to me. And one other storyline, by the way. Willie Gay and A.J. Brown were high school teammates. And they lived 5 minutes apart, and they used to go to games together. And they're good friends as well. So another little battle. Andy Reid has never lost to his opponent in this matchup. He's 3-0 as Philadelphia coach against Kansas City and 3-0 as Kansas City coach against Philly. We'll see what happens with that. Here's my keys, really. Philly's key is Hurts. He has to play well, okay? I mean, fact of the matter is he didn't play well against San Francisco, but San Francisco's the best defense in the league this year. Is it an elite defense? No, but it's very good. This is the best Chiefs defense we've had during the run, but they're not as good as the 49ers. And that's who Philly just played. So this might seem a little easier than what they've done in the past. Philly has the best offensive line in the league, okay? The Chiefs have a good defensive line. Not great, but they're good. The Eagles will need to control the line of scrimmage on the offensive line. That's the whole key to the game for them. The Chiefs secondary played really good against a good wide receiver group with Cincinnati. The Philadelphia wide receiver group is not an upgrade over Cincinnati's, in my opinion. Cincinnati's, to me, is premier. So I don't think they'll be intimidated by it. But they're still very good. And the Chiefs need to protect Mahomes. The big thing for me is, you know, when they lost to Tampa Bay a couple of years ago, Shaq Barrett wreaked havoc against Andrew Wiley. Hassan Reddick reminds me very much of Shaq Barrett. They're both speed rushers against the right tackle. And Andrew Wiley is, you know, I'll be honest, he's not an above average right tackle. He's not even an average right tackle. He's not a quick guy. He should probably be a guard. They just haven't been able to replace him. Every time they bring somebody in, they get hurt or something happens. And it's nothing against him. He's just not fast enough for these guys. To me, that's a really interesting matchup. And the other question on the other side is Philly's secondary. Can they hold the Chiefs down? I mean, they have Slay. I don't know if the rest of their corners are as good as to cover what Kansas City does to you. So there's a lot of things back and forth, and that's why it's a 1.5-point spread. It's a real close game. Gino?
You hit on both of my keys to the game, and that is for Philly, it's how well are they going to how well are they going to dominate the offense and defensive lines? And for Kansas City, the same thing. You hit on that point as well, where I think how much Kansas City gets out of this wide receiver group is going to be a huge factor in this game. We know they're going to go to Kelce. We know Kelce's a matchup disaster for everybody to cover. But how much are they going to get out of Valdes-Scantling? How much are they going to get out of Juju Smith-Schuster? And then who else is healthy? Who else is going to give you anything from the whole group of Sky Moore and that whole grouping? I think those are the two big keys. You mentioned them. I agree with you 100%. Kev.
Yeah, I think what's going to be interesting in this game, like I said, both teams finished 14-3, and Philly, that includes the two losses with Minshew. The difference, I think, in the playoffs, Kansas City has had to go against Trevor Lawrence in Jacksonville. They've had to go against Joe Burrow in Cincinnati. So they've had much tougher tests in the playoffs. Remember, Philly's played the Giants, who we know is offensively challenged, who is not going to present much of an issue there. And they play San Fran, and once they knocked out Purdy and Johnson, then nobody left to throw the ball. So it's going to be a much different game this time around for Philly, at least so far that we've seen in the playoffs. Like you said, it's going to be both teams. The game's going to be won or lost in the trenches.
Gino, you don't agree that it's a trench battle?
No. I agree the battle in the trenches is going to be key to this game, but the one thing that Kev said had to do with Philly, I know they played the offensively challenged Giants, and they played the QB-less 49ers, but they dominated both of those games. They put up huge – it's not like they won those games, 14-10. They dominated both of those games. They put up huge points in both of those games. And honestly, I see it continuing. I see them putting up a ton of points.
Well, here's the thing, Gene. I pointed to you last week, right? San Francisco, 2 weeks ago, actually. Because, by the way, the stupidity of this week in between takes the momentum out of football. It's a freaking joke. We were talking about leading with NBA tonight for a little bit because of LeBron. That's how much the football excitement comes out because they want to have a week for the freaking press. Enough of the crap. Play the game the week after. Let's everybody get together. This is ridiculous already. I know they want to sell tickets. I know they want to get the home teams all riled up. Enough of the crap.
And the Pro Bowl nonsense.
I didn't watch a second of any of the – I didn't watch the skills competition in hockey. I didn't watch anything. And I know everybody loves that stuff. I just didn't get a chance to get to any of that stuff. My dad's birthday, all sorts of different things going on, running around with the kids. It just doesn't work out. G? Kev?
It felt like an episode of Superstars, if you remember.
Yeah, it's like Superstars. I used to like Superstars. I mean, the one thing I'll disagree with you on, Gino, is Philadelphia did not have one legit drive that wasn't aided by San Francisco last week. Not one. They had a 30-yard drive. They scored a touchdown on an incomplete pass that was not overturned. They scored a touchdown on a roughing the punter, and they scored a touchdown with four defensive penalties to get them there. Let's not act like Philly's offense did anything. Hurts didn't even throw for 100 yards if you take away the Devontae Smith pass. What are you watching?
I agree. I've gotten burned with the fact that I don't think Hurts has looked really sharp the first two games of the playoffs here after coming back from the injury.
He hasn't had to, though, in Gino's defense.
Which is fair. Yeah, he hasn't had to. They've
been able to put it in a big spot. I don't think Philly's going to be shut down, I believe, and same thing with you, Kevin. The final key, and I pass it off to you, to me, is going to be the mobility of Mahomes. If he can move in the pocket, the Chiefs have a chance to win, and if he can't, they won't. Because Philly's got too many pass rushers. He's going to have to be able to move around, or this game is going to be a Philly one-sided game like it was when they played Tampa. Be perfectly honest, he was banged up that week too. He couldn't move at all. He was throwing with less than 2 seconds because they were all over him. If the same thing happens, the Chiefs will be in trouble. If, by the grace of God, his movement gets a lot better from 2 weeks ago, the Chiefs will be in the game. I like you, Gino. I think Philly's going to find a way to win, and I'm a Chief fan. I think Philly noses it out. You think it's a blowout. Kev, what are your thoughts?
I think Mahomes finds a way to get this done. I really think it's going to be a field goal game, and I think Kansas City's going to pull this one out.
I hope from your mouth to God's ears, Kev.
How many
points? I can never root for Philly.
Kev, how many points do you think the Chiefs are scoring?
I've got a 24-21.
Okay, if you don't have the Eagles scoring 30 points, it's not. They're scoring at least 30. So you better, if you think the Chiefs are winning this game, you better have them score more than 31 points. I'll tell you right now.
I think they're more defensive than you think.
Whether it's offensive, defensive, they're putting up points. They put up 38 and 31 the last two games. They are putting points up on the board.
Well, so let me put it this way, though. One thing I'm going to point out, just one move that was made toward the latter part of the year by the Chiefs. They went out and they got Brandon Williams, okay, defensive tackle that's been a stalwart for the Ravens for a lot of years. He wasn't signed early on. He's just a big beast. He doesn't really get to the quarterback, but he helps you eat up the run. The thing I think that Spagnuolo is going to do is going to do two things. Number one, he's going to try to pressure Hurts whenever he can. And number two, he's going to, you know, you're not going to see one of the things we didn't talk about 2 weeks ago. They put Mike Dana inside a little bit. He didn't do that all year. Mike Dana's an end. They played him at tackle because they couldn't that game. They're going to play the big guys and Chris Jones and all these guys inside, try to stop that run, force this team to go to the air and then try to put pressure on him. Hurts is going to have to be better than he's been, or they will not win at all. And they will not put up 30, G. They'll be lucky to put up 20 if Hurts plays the way he's been playing. I mean, the Chiefs could beat themselves like the 49ers did. I'll give you that. But the 49ers just got tired. I know you could brag about the 31 points they put up, but come on. They were three and out, and they kept being on the field. And even with that, it took a few miracles for them to get 31 points in that game.
I'm not going to brag, but they're gonna put 150 yards of rushing out there. They're gonna have 150 yards rushing on the ground. So if they do that, the whole game's going to get opened up.
150 yards from Philly is different than other teams because if it's Hurts running for 93 on scrambles or if it's the running game doing it is a big difference, G. If they're controlling the line of scrimmage and the running game is what's doing it, you got me. If they're doing it because Hurts gets out of the pocket and scrambles a little bit, totally different game. The running team of Philly is very different depending on which way you look at it. Listen, I'm not disagreeing. I picked Philly to win also. And I think the game's a little bit higher scoring than Kev, but not much. I have it like 28-27, 28-24, somewhere right like that.
If Hurts is 10 carries for 75 yards and the running backs are 20 carries for 75 yards, you go, they've held down the running attack enough. If it's 150 yards where Hurts doesn't scramble much and the running backs have rushed for 120 yards, that's a different story. They've controlled the game that way a little bit more, rushing the ball.
Yeah, if they control – listen, their offensive line is great, but the Chiefs have a decent defensive line. It's not a bad one. It really is not. They play hard. This is the best defense Mahomes has had by a lot. I mean, it's not really that close. The cornerbacks are young, but they're good. And, the linebackers are quick. And the defensive line is better. So it's I'm not saying it's a great defense, but it's the best defense they've had. I think it could be a really good game.
All right. I expect
a great game. Right, I hope.
Yeah, I know exactly.
So let's get to it. It's Kansas City -1.5 right now.
Philly -1.5.
I'm sorry, you're right. Philly -1.5. The over is 51. Kev, start us off.
So I'm going to go Kansas City 24-21. So taking them +1.5 and the under.
Okay. I'm taking Kansas City +1.5. I have it as a one-point game, which is silly. 28-27. I said Philly before. I don't want to do that for a one-point game. I'll take Kansas City to win 28-27. Why not? And I'll go with the over.
Okay. I am taking Philadelphia. That's the preseason pick, so we're riding it to the end.
I don't blame you.
I think there's a lot of points scored. I have Kansas City 38. I have Philadelphia 38, Kansas City 21, 59 points. So I got Philadelphia -1.5 and the over. I'll give you some bets, some parlay stuff. I'll give you a couple of wacky ones. I got some stuff here for you. So,
okay.
If you like the tight ends, you could take Kelce, Goddard, and Mahomes, with Mahomes, any two of those to score. You don't need all three. Plus 35.
You broke up for a sec.
Kelce, Goddard, and Mahomes, any two of those to score a touchdown, plus 235.
Okay.
I'll give you a couple of odd ones. Darren, you brought up Boston Scott. Boston Scott.
You told me to give you a random, so I gave you a random.
Well, actually, the other one I had already picked and bet. So Boston Scott, anytime touchdown, plus 450. Okay.
Okay.
The other one I like that I've already bet this is Noah Gray, anytime touchdown, plus 700. I like the way Andy Reid always seems to get a second tight end in there. You could see him, you know, second and five from the five, and they double team in Kelce, and Mahomes flicks a little pass to Noah Gray. I could see it.
One thing to know just on the game, I could see the Chiefs, if they're struggling with Reddick, playing the two tight end set for the chip and sticking with the two wide receivers a little bit here and there. Not saying the whole game, but I could see Gray getting a lot more snaps if they're struggling with Reddick. Okay. Just a thought. So that's why I picked Gray, by the way, as a random guy that could score, is because I think that he'll play a little more. Kev?
Darren, do the Chiefs have a running back who's good in pass protection too?
Jerick McKinnon is a great pass protector. McKinnon. He's elite. He's a college quarterback at Georgia Southern, and yet somehow, some way, at 5'10", 205, is a great pass blocker.
Yeah,
which means that you'll see him more than Pacheco in a lot of big spots and a lot of passing downs. The Chiefs are going to have to be successful by keeping Philly off balance. They're going to have to throw the ball on first down. They're going to have to do things a little off balance, and I think Andy has no problem being a little bit unpredictable. Just a thought.
We haven't had a safety in the Super Bowl in about 5 years. You could take either the Kansas City money line or the Eagle money line plus a safety. The parlay is plus 1,100. Okay. All right. I told you I got some weird ones. All right. First touchdown. Mm-hmm. I go either tight end. If you want Kelce, it's plus 700. If you went Goddard, it's plus 1,200. First touchdown scored. Okay.
Either one of those is a good bet. I got to be honest.
I actually like both of those. I'll give you a Kansas City one, which is the Kansas City money line with Mahomes to throw three touchdowns and throw 300 yards plus 425. Okay. If you like the Eagles, I got the Eagles minus 1.5, the over of 51.5. At plus 260 with a Hurts touchdown is plus 425. And if you add a fourth option with a Goddard touchdown, it's plus 900.
Wow.
Okay. And now let's get to some funky ones. You ready?
Oh, we didn't get to the funky ones yet?
Those are not the funky ones.
Okay, G.
When you start throwing safeties in there, I thought those were the funky.
I thought we were going around the horn. Okay, here we go. All right. Yeah. I'm ready.
Philadelphia to win and win the coin toss plus 250.
Okay.
Kansas City to win the game and to win the coin toss plus 300. Now, I know, Kev, you're big into the Gatorade that they throw, so I'm going to give you the Gatorade.
Oh, yeah.
Kev's been talking about this for 2 months.
I'm going to give you two of them that I actually think could happen based on the team colors, right? So, if you like the Eagles, you could take the yellow or green Gatorade for plus 165.
Oh, gosh.
If you like the Chiefs, you could take the pink or red Gatorade at plus 450. And now we get ultra funky.
Funkier than the Gatorade. Okay.
There is something called an octopus. The octopus bet is for a player to score a touchdown and the preceding 2-point conversion. If you're okay. The same player. So basically Mahomes runs one in from the two, they go for the 2-point conversion and he runs another one in. If you think that would happen in the game, it's plus 1,400.
Okay.
And here we go.
Score all 8 points. Okay.
You can also take what they call a scorigami. Okay.
Okay.
And every possible score here.
You ready? It is a final score that has never happened in an NFL or playoff game. If you think that is going to happen, that will pay you $2,000 on the money line.
That's hard.
Bet 100, win 2,000.
Oh gosh.
So that's just some funky bets. I'll probably take a couple of those. I kind of like. I'm taking the Eagles. I'll probably take some Eagle bets with the over. I'll probably take a Hurts touchdown, a Goddard touchdown. Those are the easy ones for me. I kind of like those. I actually like, honestly, I like the first touchdown from either tight end. I think that's a nice bet. Plus 700 for Kelce, plus 1200 for Goddard. I actually like those a lot.
All right.
So those are my bets for Super Bowl.
There we are. We got a lot of bets out there.
anything else on Super Bowl number 57, guys?
Just looking forward to a good game. That's all we want. We want a competitive game where it's coming down to the fourth quarter. I think everybody that's watching wants it. It's a tough game to watch. It's not. It's longer intermissions, longer every commercial break. It gets a little grueling. The commercials mean something. People want to watch those. Rihanna at halftime. There's a lot of stuff that goes on.
I can't wait for that halftime show.
Hey, listen. They no longer – the NFL has made a real strong determination that they don't want to target their typical fan at the half. They want to target the people that they're getting in extra. They want to try to get younger. They want to try to get more urban. Listen, I'm not saying that there aren't younger and urban fans of the NFL. I'm just saying the season ticket holders and the people that watch it Sunday game in, game out is a little bit older and a little bit lily white. This is the halftime shows aren't built for that anymore. They want to entertain the masses.
All right. So we're going to move on to NBA. Just a couple of things have happened in the last week in the NBA.
Wow.
Last night, LeBron James passed Kareem Abdul-Jabbar for the most points scored, number 38,387. He broke the record that stood from 1984 when Kareem passed Wilt.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Wilt held that record from 1966 to 1984. So in the span of, about 50-something years, we've only had three top scorers. Tells you something. LeBron is now enters the elite category in the NBA. We can talk.
I think he was already there. I got to be honest.
He was he was definitely already there. But if anybody had any doubts, I don't think any of us had any doubts. But if anybody had any doubts, this kind of cements it. And, you know, looking ahead, one of the things that I heard came up is that before he retires, he's probably going to be the only guy in the NBA with 40,000 points, 10,000 assists, and 10,000 rebounds, which puts him in some kind of category we've never seen before and probably never will again. Kev, want to talk about a little LeBron?
And he did it in a Laker loss.
Against a mediocre Oklahoma City team.
Yeah. Anthony Davis did not look very thrilled. If you saw the clips there of him sitting on the bench as LeBron scoring the record-setting basket there.
Russell Westbrook didn't look pleased at all. And
that was in Utah.
Well, that's another thing we'll talk about.
That got him treated, but go ahead. Sorry, Kev.
Yep. Like you said, we'll set the record. He had about 31,000 points. Kareem passed him and went 7,000 past. I mean, it was incredible how far you went ahead of Wilt. We had a couple of guys come close. You know, Malone got fairly close to mailman. Kobe probably could have hung on for a couple more years if he really wanted to. Mm-hmm. I think he still had a little bit of juice left. He could have gotten closer. MJ and Dirk have also passed Wilt. They're still in between there. Like I said, LeBron will go down as one of the most unique players in NBA history. We've never seen anybody with his size, his ball handling skill, and his ability to score. The combination of all three is nearly unprecedented in NBA history. So I'm not taking any of that away from him, but I still don't name him the GOAT.
Well,
I still go MJ. I think Michael Jordan was the best of all time. We got to see him. Now, MJ, right now, LeBron is about 6,000 points ahead of him. A couple of things to keep in mind there. Number one, LeBron came into the NBA right out of high school. Jordan had to go to college. Jordan spent 3 years at UNC. Jordan, during his first 9 years, eight times he played at least 78 games. The only season he didn't was the second year when he broke his foot. All of a sudden, at the age of 30, he retires. Suspension? Retirement?
I know there's problem. Conspiracy. Who knows?
There's a conspiracy theory there that we've all heard. We're not going to get into that. But he retired.
I want to hit some baseballs.
Yeah. Came back and missed most of the 2 years. You know, he came back, played only 17 games that second year. Then for the next 3 years, he led the league in scoring again, averaging 30 points a game. This guy averaged 30 a year consistently. Then decided to retire for 3 more years and came back at 38 and 39 and still was putting over 20 points a game after 3 years away. If he had the ability to come out after high school, and if you don't take away especially that first retirement, maybe he delays retirement 35 for a couple of years, doesn't tack on those Wizards years. I think he sets the record for points. I've never seen a scorer like LeBron, like Michael. And we grew up watching Michael in a time where teams actually played defense, where he did not have free reign in the lane. If he drove to the lane, if he drove to the basket, he knew he was getting hit and fouled, and still did it fearlessly. LeBron is bigger; he can handle the punishment a little bit more. He gets plenty of calls as well. Not taking that away from him. But I think, you know, the physicality of LeBron versus Michael is just – they're very different players to compare to. Again, my gut is MJ still the best. I've talked too much. Guys, what do you think?
Well, I'll throw my two cents in. Just a couple things. Hey, listen, he's the all-time scoring champ. You can't take anything away from him. 19 straight years, 25-point average per game. Never below 25 points a game. You know how many scoring titles LeBron has won? One. One scoring title in all that time. He was never the elite scorer in any season except for one. You know how many buzzer beaters he has in regular season games during that time?
Not many.
Two buzzer beating shots. Five in the playoffs. So you want to count it for seven. I feel like I can name 100 from Jordan, but maybe I'm crazy. He's the all-time leading scorer on three different teams at points per game. You know, he has the highest average for the Cavs all time, Lakers all time, and Heat all time. As overall points per game. But the big point you brought up that I agree with completely is the NBA is just a different game now. It's not to take away LeBron. It's just what it is. Kareem, he had to learn the sky hook because he wasn't allowed to dunk. You know? And the physicality of going up against Moses Malone and Bob Lanier and every other physical guy you went up to, Robert Parrish, Gino.
Kareem also played 4 years in college.
Well, he played three, but he was freshman year, the first one. Yeah, so right. But he was in 4 years of college.
And 38,000 plus points for Kareem. How many three-pointers did he hit in his career?
Well, yeah, one in his whole career.
One.
So he didn't do anything. And this is the takeaway from LeBron. It's just that when you watched it happen, you know, and I know some people will say, well, LeBron got to all those titles and he carried teams by himself. And he kind of did. I'm not saying he didn't, especially those early Cav teams. It just never seemed like he was great, and he made other players really good around him. I think Jordan made players great around him. I just think it was a different game. The defense was ridiculous at the time when Jordan played. It was hard on Kareem as well, but he was 7'2", so he could overcome it a little bit. LeBron is great. Personally, not a fan. Personally, his legacy in the NBA was my least favorite generation of the NBA. I don't enjoy the game as much as I once did. I don't think as highly of the style of play now as I used to. I'm not saying that everybody enjoyed 74-69 New York Knicks, Miami Heat games. I'm not saying everybody enjoyed that. But I don't mind watching the game 98-94 or 102-100. These games are out of hand. Nobody's allowed to cover you. No one's allowed to block you. You know, his consistency. He's not a compiler. I'm not going to sit there and call him Don Sutton here. But 10 points or more in 1,140 straight games is a record that probably will never be broken. But, I mean, it's not an overly impressive, but it's 10 points a game. He always scored double digits.
I mean, what's it, two games in his career, I think?
Yeah.
That he scored in single digits? I think
yeah, exactly. I mean, consistent scorer and very physical. Gino, you had something?
So, yeah. So, before this week, before he breaks the record, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anything he did, for me, moves him up or down my greatest of all time listing. And for me, I have Jordan 1. I don't know how he would get past it in my eyes. I don't know how he gets to the number one spot. For me, it's Jordan. My 2 and my 3 are Kareem and LeBron. And my 4 and 5 are Russell and Wilt. And I don't know, you know, if that's my 5, and I understand it's my 5, but if that's my 5, there's nothing at this point that LeBron can do to go ahead of Jordan at this point. So for me, he broke the record. It's great. It's a great accomplishment. Listen, 38,387 is an amazing record. But if you're a fan of this game and you already know in your eyes, listen, Jordan's 1 to me. Now, maybe even a 2 to 5 shifts around for a lot of people. I get it. If you think Kareem is better, if you think Russell with his 10 titles, right? I mean, you know, I could see a lot
Kobe's
of people.
Kobe's in a lot of people's top 5s too, Gino. Yeah.
I could see people including moving mine, around. By the way. But to me, the list starts with Jordan. If you want to tell me the 2 is LeBron, fine. But to me, the list starts with Jordan. I mean, Darren?
Yeah, my one point, and I'm not saying he's 1 or 2, but the most underrated superstar of all time, and I never liked him when he played, was Larry Bird. He gets bypassed in these freaking things all the time. Magic is in a lot of people's top 5. Larry Bird could do everything on the basketball court, including fight. But he can shoot, he can rebound, he can pass. He invented the falling out of bounds, calling the timeout thing before they outlawed it. He did so many unique things that people don't talk about. And you only can imagine if Bird was a little more selfish as a player, where his scoring numbers could have been and everything like that, because he was that good. And when every time anybody challenged him, he was the best trash talker apparently in the league as well, which you didn't know. I hated him. I hated the Celtics. Still do. And it's not like I rooted for Bird. I despised him. But when everybody goes to their top 5, top 10, Bird is never mentioned. And I just don't get it. Larry Bird was ridiculous. Bird and Magic to me are 1 and 1A in that generation. They're not 1 and 2. They're 1 and 1. And I love Magic, and they were 1 and 1A. Kev?
I mean, you hear the games where, you know, he played lefty only and put up 40.
Yeah, exactly. He's ridiculous.
the duel with Dominique. A couple of those fourth quarters where, you know, they each scored 20 points and Bird would just trash talk the whole game. How many times did he come down to the other team's bench? Watch this go in. Almost stole it. Buried the 3 from the corner.
He was just a prick. I love Timmy Duncan as well, but to me, Bird is the guy that always gets underrated the most, even more so than the mailman and Duncan. I just think people forget about how great Bird was.
Now I have Bird 6, right? But I can't move Bird ahead of my top 5.
No, I get it. Listen, you know what I mean? I have Kobe ahead of a couple of you guys. I mean, you know. And there are people who love Bill Russell.
I personally have Kareem a little bit lower. But again, personal, you know, you're talking the best of the best.
Exactly. Oh, absolutely. And of course.
Rank him whatever you order you want. As long as you have in your top 10, as long as the top 10 makes sense, the names at least, put him in whatever
you want. Around, Willie Mays or Mickey Mantle. You know, I mean, it's one of those type of arguments. You know, everybody's going to have different. If you like the Giants or you like Willie more, I mean, Duke was always 3rd. Not to insult Duke Snyder. He's also a Hall of Famer. But I'm just saying, it's kind of like that argument, you know? Do you like Willie better or you like Mickey better? I mean, you know, it's different. I mean, different players, different guys, different ways that they did things. One guy won much more. One guy had a better overall lifetime statistics at the end. You know, you could go anywhere you want with these guys. And they played different positions in different eras. Jerry West. Apparently, you know, nobody could cover him. He scored 40 a night, whatever it was, without the 3-point line. You know, Pistol Pete, as you brought up last week, I mean, he wasn't a great pro, but he still scored like a madman. You know, I mean, there's so many guys you throw into your top 10, top 15, top 20. But I think all of us, and maybe it's just our generation and when we watched the game and how the Knicks were good, so it was much more in our area watching basketball every night because it was must see with when the Knicks played the Bulls. But Jordan just seemed like, you know, you had to take it from Jordan. LeBron, I never felt that LeBron was unbeatable ever.
Yeah.
Gee?
All right, and so we had a couple of interesting trades also occurred the last week.
Yes, sir.
The Nets finally traded away Kyrie Irving. And then we had a Laker trade happen today. Kev, you want to talk to me about these trades?
So the Kyrie trade, Kyrie and Markieff Morris for Spencer Dinwiddie, the ex-Net. Dorian Finney-Smith, a 3-and-D glue type guy.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of picks, including the 2027 first rounder.
Yep.
You are not going to re-sign Kyrie. He's been, for all the talent he has on the court when he plays, this is now the third team that he's left under not ideal circumstances. The Cavaliers, he left because he was jealous of LeBron. He left Boston for some reason, forced his way to the Nets. He came to a package deal with KD. They had to sign DeAndre Jordan to make him happy. They've put up with his off-the-court antics. They've put up or dealt with his COVID vaccination status last year. Again, that's a personal choice for him. I'm not going to blast him for not getting vaxxed or for getting vaxxed. That was his choice. Then you have the stuff with the tweet this year with the anti-Semitic link. There's been a lot of stuff that's been surrounding Kyrie. He's only played about half the games the last 3.5 years with the Nets. To me, you're not going to resign him. The fact that you got something for him. Dinwiddie, we know, is a, 75% of Kyrie stats wise?
Yeah, somewhere in that range. Listen, he was a good Net his first time around. He really was, actually.
For less money and a lot less headache from what you hear. And Finney Smith gives him, like I said, that glue guy, that 3-and-D guy. Always welcome to a team. The big question now is going to be, we've got under 24 hours left to the trade deadline as we're recording the podcast. Is KD staying in Net? Or is he going to request a trade also? Do they make a trade before the deadline? Do they do it after the season? If KD stays with this team, they are still a playoff team. And somebody that they're going to be in that 4-5 type series. Probably playing, that Cleveland type matchup. That's going to be a toss-up series. You never know what's going to happen there. And if they're going off to play Boston, who knows? If KD gets hot, he can carry a team to a victory for a series. But that's longer term. But like I said, immediately today, Nets had to do what they had. Nets did what they had to do. And now they've had Cam Thomas step up in the absence of Kyrie, in the absence of KD, who's still out hurt. Cam Thomas, a second-year pro out of LSU, has put up 3 40-point games in a row, the youngest player in NBA history to do so. Have they found a diamond in the rough?
And efficiently, by the way. He scored 47 the other night on 29 shots. I mean, shot 15 for 29 from the floor. Cam Thomas was a good player at LSU, a real good player. It's because he's not as tall as they want in the NBA now when they do the height and the measurement type stuff. But the kid can flat out score. I agree with you on that.
Yep.
Just a quick point on it. He requested a trade. The Nets said that we're not going to give him the max deal he wants. He wants the 4-year, $200 million. He'd only get that if you traded him. Cuban needed to do something because Doncic has no one to play with. So he had to get some sort of a star. It actually makes sense for both teams only if they're able to re-sign Kyrie if he decides to go there and not the Lakers, which everybody rumors that he's going to go back because he wants to play with LeBron, ironically, the guy he was trying to get away from all those years ago.
Yep.
As Kyrie's not another nightmare.
Well, Kyrie's always going to be Kyrie. These guys, this is the NBA league is a me league now. It's not about the team. It's about me. I want to play with my friends. I want to play. I have to play with these guys or I'm not playing. You know, it's a lot more of that than any other league that we follow or anybody follows. The closest thing to it is probably, you know, EPL, where, you know, where you get these superstars on loan and you know, the haves and the have-nots in soccer. I mean, but in North American sports and hockey in baseball and in football, you know, it's a totally different game. You know, it's you know, usually, you know, you have one guy or two guys, but now these guys, and start up with LeBron. I want to play with my two big friends. I want to play with Wade, and I want to play with Bosch, and we're going to win titles together. And now Dallas had one superstar. You can't win with one superstar. You can win with two. So they went out and got Kyrie. The thing about that that's going to be interesting is they both do a lot of similar things with the ball. They both handle the ball a lot. But Kyrie, there's no doubting his talent. You're right about the other question. Does Durant want to stay? Interesting thing the other night. He actually sat on the bench with the team. Even though he's hurt, I didn't think he was going to. I thought that leaves like a hint that he might say, I'll stay.
Yeah.
They also traded Kessler Edwards this week to Sacramento, freed up $8 million off the cap that way as well. I mean, you know, again, it's not somebody that's another one of those long two guards that played a Pepperdine. He goes out to Sacramento. They save $8 million, get a second round pick and future consideration type stuff for him. The Nets are at a crossroads right now because here it is. I mean, you talked about it a couple of weeks ago, Kev, about the Knicks and you know, you like having all these players that can play. The Knicks are maxed out right now as a 6 or 7 seed. No, they're not going to be able to. At best, they squeeze up to the four. At best, they ever squeeze up to the four in the next couple of years because Philly is that stacked. Boston is that good, and Giannis is the best player in the league at this point, in my opinion. Him and Doncic are the two best players, right? So you go, you look at that, and you say, wow, they have a nice team, a nice nucleus, but they don't have that one amazing superstar. They have three really, really good players, and it's a superstar league. So if they lose Durant, they'll probably end up the season as a 6 or 7 seed because they have that much of a lead. But if they keep Durant, I think you're right. They'll be in that 4-5 series. And they have a good shot against Cleveland and getting into the Boston series. G?
Interesting note, and this will not happen because of the way the league is, but the team that actually could probably offer the most would be the Knicks if they were trying to put together a trade package for Durant. They're one of the teams that has a ton of picks, a ton of players, young players. They could probably put together a package, but we know the Knicks and the Nets are not going to make a deal when – the Nets are not sending Durant from Brooklyn to the Garden. So,
no, you're probably right.
We had another trade today, and that was a 3-team trade between the Lakers, the Timberwolves, and the Jazz. The Lakers ship Westbrook out. They wind up getting, and I'll just give you the major players in this. D'Angelo Russell goes to the Lakers. Connolly goes to the Wolves. Westbrook goes to the Jazz. The Jazz get the Lakers pick. A couple other picks and players that are all over the map. Should be interesting. This is exactly what LeBron wanted. He wanted somebody else in here. We'll see what happens. Probably still going to come down to whether or not Anthony Davis is healthy and strong enough to play this out. That, in my opinion, that too much is riding on the health of Anthony Davis and whether or not he can, you know, give 100% effort for the rest of the season. Kev, any other NBA points you want to bring up? I know the trade deadline is tomorrow, so a lot of stuff could change between now and next week when we do this. But
yeah, if anything comes up, we'll be posting or sharing on our Facebook page any of the big trades that happened between now and the deadline.
Okay.
And giving our opinions about it.
Yes, which everybody's waiting for.
Oh, yeah.
Do we want to do a top five, or do we want to hold off until next week after all the trades happen?
I think we could do it.
I think I've got one.
All right.
All right. Number one, I actually put the Bucks ahead of the Celtics. Bucks have won 8 in a row, 9 of 10, playing real well, and knocked the Celtics down to 2. They have only won 6 of the last 10. Just finishing up tonight, as we were recording this, the Celtics did beat Philly. So big win for Boston there. Third, I've got the Nuggets. They're the best team in the West. Jokic is playing at an incredible level. He's got four straight triple-doubles, and eight of the last nine games he's got triple-doubles. He's just on an incredible roll right now.
Unbelievable.
Four, and like I said, I did this before the game tonight. I do have the Sixers at fourth. They are 8-2 in their last 10, still playing very well. I had Memphis at five, I think, last week. They've now lost 8 of 9, so I've dropped them down. An interesting team I don't have in the top five, but a team that a few weeks ago was probably in our top five or real close, the Pelicans. Fell off the map. They lost 10 in a row. They've rebounded some. They've got 3 in a row. Maybe they can turn this around and still have a good second half here. But by fifth, I have a tie. I couldn't decide between the two of them. The Clippers and the Suns, both playing real well. Both have won 8 of 10. That's my tie for fifth. Darren?
Yeah, I have the same four. I have Milwaukee 1, Boston 2, Denver 3, Philly 4. And I have the Clippers clearly 5. I put the Clippers as my 5. So nothing really crazy. I have Cleveland actually as my 6 over Phoenix. So the Clippers are 8 out of the last 10. They're playing really good basketball right now. Paul George seems to have found his groove. And again, you know, they have the two stars they could play, and the Clippers are playing well. Jake?
I have Boston 1, Milwaukee 2, Denver 3. I have Philly 4, and I have Cleveland at the 5. I think Boston just hanging in right now, because if Milwaukee continues this winning streak that they're on right now, they're so hot. I think next week I'll probably move them ahead. That's NBA for the moment. Let's talk a little NHL. Kev, you made a huge point last week when we talked about the Islander trade. And the only way this trade was going to work is if they signed Bo Horvat to a contract. And
they did.
We are happy to report it is an 8-year worth $68 million contract for the 27-year-old center. Kev?
Whew. At least it makes you feel better about giving up that first-round pick. At least now you know you've got a guy who is going to be around, assuming everything works out, who will be around for many, many years. Given the Islanders' track record with their first-round picks, they give him a cup of coffee and then send him on their way. And last night in his home debut, he scored a goal. The Islanders have won 4 in a row now. They're trying to get back into that wild card race here. They're sitting right now, I think, tied with Pittsburgh.
Yep.
It comes down to games played. So Pittsburgh's got a bunch of games in hand right now. But hopefully with Horvat, gives them a little more offensive depth up front and gives the Islanders a chance to get into that wild card and try to get that third area team into the playoffs here, which would make the Metropolitan playoffs very fun.
Agreed. I will tell you, I caught one thing on the skills competition over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
I watched about 4 minutes of the hardest shot, and clearly none of these guys have a harder shot than Zdeno Chara, because Chara had hit 108 1 year. These guys were right around 100, 102. So just a little note.
That's these guys also aren't 7'1" on skates either.
Yeah.
Chara was humongous.
Yeah,
that's something to take away from him. He was just a monster.
Even going back to like McInnes used to have that hard shot too.
Oh, God, yeah.
Al McInnes ripped. As a Flame fan, I love watching Al McInnes play. I'll just put it that way.
Same with Eugene, though. I watched about 5 minutes on Friday night with the skills competition. I was flipping around and they had the accuracy. Just happened to turn on in time for the accuracy. Got to the semifinals and there's Brock Nelson pulling off the win in the skills competition. Only reason I stayed to watch it.
An island to root for.
Yeah. The All-Star game Saturday. Again, I think between games, flipped on. It happened to be the Metropolitan Division versus the Atlantic Division for a few minutes. I watched that till the end. The Islanders did nothing there. And I flipped off the rest of the All-Star game.
I want to just interrupt the NHL talk for 1 second, because the Knicks have made a trade tonight.
Okay.
Breaking news.
They sent Cam Reddish and a first-round pick a protected first round pick to Portland in exchange for Josh Hart.
Hart's having a decent year. He is. I mean, you know, he's not a superstar. He gives him another guard.
I should have
not part of the rotation.
I should have did the breaking news.
It's not the trade that's going to put him over the top, but it gives him another player that can fit into the rotation.
So okay. you had a trade. Didn't they trade a first rounder to get Reddish?
Yes.
Now they have to include a first rounder to get rid of him.
Yeah.
I'm protected, so he's not a lottery pick.
Yeah.
Most likely. Most likely that's where it sits. But yep.
That's great.
Kev, let's start the way with the top five in the NHL.
I just have a couple of points in the NHL, if that's okay.
Yeah.
The Horvat thing, 27 years old. Islanders stars, for the most part, outside of Barzal, are aging. They really needed somebody young. I think that was a great move to build around. The defense still has the makings of being really good on this team, and the goaltender's world class, right? Pellick and Pulock, just because that's their names, not because I'm trying to be funny, are plus 10 and plus 9, respectively. So outside of Horvat, though, they do not have a 20-goal scorer on this team. Going into when I wrote this report, I think last night somebody's put up that 20. Lee and Nelson have been fine, but they need a little bit more from Barzal, Parisi, and Wahlstrom to kind of get to the next level. The Devils have eight guys that are better than the Isles' best plus 10. That's the difference, okay?
Yeah.
The Devils have, and Hughes and Hischier both have over 20 goals. The Rangers have six guys plus 10 or better. They have Zibanejad and Kreider with over 20 goals. And they have great speed, great youth, and a world-class goalie as well. So I hope to see all three of these teams in the playoffs is really what I'm getting at. The Islanders making the improvement to get the superstar in Horvat. The Rangers already play really fast and really good. The Devils, Jack Hughes has been outstanding. I mean, he's the guy we thought we were going to see. He's finally got some talent around him, and you're really seeing it. Kev, you're going to make a point?
I was going to say, you pronounced Mika's name much better than I did.
Zibanejad. I actually like the Rangers. You don't. So why would you pronounce it right? But it's kind of a fun time for local hockey because we haven't had all three teams playing this well in a while. I know the Islanders are slumping, but the four in a row, slumping first half, I should say, but the four in a row makes you believe you got to love Sorokin. I'm dying to get your backup goalie in Calgary. I want Varlamov so bad I can fucking taste it because I have two guys that can't stop the puck with anything. I mean, they suck. you can't even make up the Calgary goaltending situation. I just think that Horvat gives them that extra gear and that extra player up front and makes that top six legit with everybody else. And I think that no longer are they inferior in the top six, and they were already probably as good, if not better, than everybody else on the defensive side. First two pairings, plus the goaltenders. Listen, you might like the Ranger kid Shesterkin better, but it's like, you know, it's splitting hairs. I mean, these are both elite goaltenders. Sorokin's been outstanding ever since he's been here. So real excited about what the Islanders did. I think it was unbelievable, the signing of Horvat. Lamoriello did the right thing, did everything correctly, showed why he's a great GM. Sorry, G.
No, that's right on the head. We couldn't agree more with that. Kev, top five NHL.
Yeah, it's tough the last week because with the All-Star break, most teams may have only played one or two games. So looking at from last week to this week, I kept them at top four the same. I have Boston, Carolina, the Devils, and Toronto. I had Tampa Bay in the top five last week. They've lost a couple in a row here, so I put Edmonton up there as the red hot 8-1-1 in their last 10. They've got Connor McDavid. Nobody else does.
I have the same top five. I will tell you this. I was looking a little bit more closely at the Boston Bruins. They are 22-1-3 at home.
Yeah.
Yep.
That is just unbelievable at this point in the season. Darren?
The Devils only had three road losses. Anyway, Boston 1, Devils 2, Carolina 3, the nemesis that is the Edmonton Oilers 4, and even though they lost the other night, I'm keeping Colorado in my top five. I think they're starting to catch stride. I think Nathan MacKinnon is really he's the only guy that you can sit there and honestly say to me anyway that I could put in the same breath as McDavid. Nathan MacKinnon can do a lot with the puck, man.
Okay. Let's move to the topsy-turvy world of the college basketball season.
It's, oh my God.
It's incredible.
All right, just a couple things. Just another crazy week. And before we get into that, just tonight, Tennessee loses at Vanderbilt. Now, just so everybody understands what this means, why this is not that surprising. Tennessee has been a top 10 team in the AP poll like six times and visited Vanderbilt. They're 1-5. This is an in-state rivalry. This is just, I mean, Vandy plays them tough. This was kind of a flukish game. Tennessee was up 2. They get the inbounds. They could have dunked it. The guy tried to dribble it instead. They caught him. They fouled him. He missed the foul shot, missed the one-on-one, the one-on-one. They got down the court. The Vanderbilt players penetrated, kicked it out for a three. Guy hit a three at the buzzer. Tennessee loses by a point. Nice win for Vanderbilt team that lost by 57 points last week to Alabama. So this tells you where college basketball is. Purdue lost to Indiana. Still number one because everybody else lost too. Tennessee, yeah. Not only that, they lost to they shot 27% against Auburn and won. It was a rock fight. That's all that was. It was
and I watched that game.
Rock fight.
46-43. I watched the whole game.
And the thing about it was the Auburn kid was fouled. He was clearly fouled at the end of the game. But they were so physical in that game and so many things weren't called. You can't really go nuts. But Bruce Pearl was right to be lost. Houston kind of steamrolled Temple, got back on track after they lost to Temple a couple weeks ago. Alabama held off LSU after blowing out Vandy. I'm just going through the top 10, guys. I'm not going to go crazy. Arizona swept the Oregons. Virginia fell at Virginia Tech. I brought that up last week as a game that this is Virginia Tech Super Bowl. It's the in-state rivalry, and they did it. K-State loses twice. And then they come back yesterday and they win a game. They beat TCU, but they lost at Kansas and lost at home to Texas. Kansas beat Kansas State and then got blown out by Iowa State. UCLA swept the Washingtons and Texas beat Baylor and K-State on the road. Then they lost to Kansas. So it's like nobody goes through a week without losing, except in the Pac-12 where there's only three good teams. That's it. I mean, it's a weird freaking thing. Gee.
And last night, UConn almost destroyed Marquette.
I know, and I had Marquette moving into my top eight, and now I'm torn about it.
I will tell you one of the great games from the last week over the weekend, St. Mary's Gonzaga.
We have to talk about it, my friend.
It was just a great game. Go for it.
I stayed up for that one. Team of the week for me was St. Mary's. They knocked off San Francisco, and then they came back on Gonzaga for the overtime win. Aiden Mahaney. Three-star recruit freshman, had an awful first half, had an awful first 10 minutes of the second half. He was doing it right, Kevin. He had a donut going. All of a sudden down the stretch, he couldn't miss. And he closed with great shooting. And then he had the big assist for the win, for the tie to send it to overtime. And then he kept scoring in overtime. The kid was lights out. St. Mary's, you know, listen, they may not beat Gonzaga at the Kennel, and I'm not saying that they will, but they have a two-game lead on Gonzaga. If they take care of business against everybody else, they win the regular season's crown with a guy that was not projected to start when the season began. I mean, he won the when the practices began. Yep. By the time the season was ready to go, Aiden Mahaney had established himself, but they didn't know what they had in this freshman. The kid was lights out. I just thought that was the team of the week. Just because, you know, I know Gonzaga is not as good as they've been, but it's still good. This is still a team that beat Alabama and Birmingham by 10. This is not a team that you sleep on. The interesting thing about Gonzaga, Timmy's a monster. He's a nightmare matchup. Shooting less than 60% from the line. And that's not like him. He's a career guy that shoots in the high 70s. So they're missing opportunities at the line. They don't have that point guard that's getting everything done for them like they're used to having. And it's showing. I mean, you know, Mark Few had his problems in the offseason. He had the drunk driving thing, so he got suspended for the first game and a few other things like that. But it's a good team. But St. Mary's stormed back on him in Moraga. What a win. What a win.
I mean, I watched the game also. They were down, I think, 7 with like 8 minutes left, came back, got that game into overtime and put it away in overtime. It's a real good win for St. Mary's. I'm kind of surprised St. Mary's did not make the top 25. They did not make. They're not inside the top 20. Are they?
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they are. They're in the top 15, G.
Okay. I looked. I didn't see it, but okay. I may have missed it.
You might have went right by it, but yeah, they're in the top 15. I don't know the exact number off the top of my head.
Elvis, the AP of the coaches, St. Mary's 15, Gonzaga 16.
Okay, yeah. Good. All right.
Yeah, yeah. They were in the top 15. I didn't know if they were 14 or 15. I knew that they were one apart, but yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Other upsets, Iowa State loses at the last place Texas Tech team. You know, Gonzaga, we talked about. Baylor fell to Texas. Clemson loses twice. We talked about them 2 weeks ago. Clemson is a team that, despite being in first place, has to win some games to get into the tournament.
That terrible non-conference schedule.
They don't play anybody. I mean, they lost at BC, who, by the way, went back tonight and won again in a game that they weren't supposed to win. So BC is bothering people. They won at Virginia Tech. I'm not saying Virginia Tech's going anywhere, but still.
Clemson lost at South Carolina.
That's bad.
That's bad.
That's bad. San Diego State stayed in the top 25, but they lost to Nevada. But then they blew out Boise State because that conference is all over the place.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Miami and UConn and Marquette were the only teams that were real strong last week. And then Marquette fell this week to UConn by 15. UConn reemerges. And then you got to talk about it. Indiana beat Purdue. They jumped out on them. Then they lost to Maryland, beat Purdue, then they beat Rutgers. So, I mean, it's like all over the place. Tennessee had already lost to Florida, and Florida Atlantic, the last team I wanted to touch on. I mentioned it last week that the game against Birmingham was something you had to watch for. Birmingham beat them. Now, they've won two in a row since, but, you know, Birmingham knocked them off. Now, three teams that we've discussed, Charleston's lost a couple, Kent State has lost a couple, and now Florida Atlantic has lost a game. So when you go through these teams, you know, do I think College of Charleston had the little wiggle room to lose a game here or there? Maybe. But losing two seemed a little high. Florida Atlantic, I still think, is in pretty good shape to get an at-large. But if they lose another game they should win, they'll be in trouble. Kent State is now not even the one seed in their conference anymore. Now, Toledo and Akron are right there with them. So it's wow. College basketball is a little crazy. I know we're going to touch on a couple of conferences tonight. One of you boys had the Big Ten. Why don't we start with that? Who had the Big Ten? Gino, kick it off.
Big Ten is a power conference. They're the number three conference in the country. They got some big teams. Purdue, Indiana, Rutgers, Illinois. I mean, they're probably going to get eight teams into this tournament. They have five teams with a net ranking under 30. They're from top to bottom. They're a good conference. Really, there's only three teams that are probably completely out of this race. The other 11 teams are probably in the race to get a bid somewhere. We'll see what happens. They have a lot of good players in this conference. I mean, obviously, Zach Edey on Purdue leads the way. He's fourth in the NCAA in scoring. He's in line for player of the year. Iowa's Chris Murray is averaging 20 points a game. He's right in the top 15 in scoring. Indiana with Trace Jackson Davis, he's all over the place. He's number two in the NCAA in blocks per game. He's got 19 points a game. He's all over the place. And that was pretty evident against that game against Purdue. We saw that. Penn State's got Jalen Pickett. He's number four in the NCAA in assists. So, I mean, we got a big conference with a lot of good players. They're probably going to get eight bids. They could get nine. Purdue, Indiana, Rutgers. Rutgers is looking really good right now. Illinois, Maryland, Iowa, Michigan, Michigan State. And then between Northwestern, Penn State, and Wisconsin, we'll see if there's a ninth bid to come out of that conference. But it's a real strong conference. They're probably going to get eight. They may get a ninth. We'll see, depending on how some of these things fall out. Big Ten is strong. And we'll see how far this conference goes. Purdue leads the way. And we'll see what else happens with this conference, guys.
Northwestern is the best team of those other teams you mentioned. They're better than Michigan, by the way, and they're probably better than Michigan State right now. Wisconsin also beat Penn State. I think that really knocks them out tonight, having that home loss to Wisconsin. Just my opinion. Kevy, what's going on in the big magical world of the Big 12? best conference in basketball.
Helps if I unmute the mic.
Yeah, no, I like what you were starting off with, Kevin.
It never sounded better.
It was almost as good as Gino calling the Big Ten a power conference.
Well, the Big Twelve is also a power conference. The Big 12 is also a power conference. This is a conference that is better than the Big Ten. They have six legitimate teams that are solidly already in the tournament, I think. They're all top 20 ranked, all top 20 computers. Texas, 19-5. All their losses are basically the ranked teams. They've got Marcus Carr, the senior, at 17 points per game, 4 assists per game. The interesting thing is what's going to happen when they play a team with a little bit of size. Texas only has about 3 guys who are 6'7 or bigger. So they do play very small. It's going to be interesting to see matchup-wise when they get into the tournament. If you get a big team in there, that could be an upset possibility there. Iowa State lost tonight to West Virginia. Iowa State's been a little slumping here. They're not very star-laden team. The top two scorers, Jaron Holmes and Gabe Kalscher, both average about 13 points a game. Both are seniors, so they have the senior leadership. But again, they don't have that really superstar-type player in that team. Kansas, all 5 losses are to ranked teams. They're 19-5. They've got probably the best player in the conference. Darren, you may have a difference of opinion, but Jalen Wilson, almost 21 points a game, 8.5 rebounds per game.
Huh? He's really good. He's special.
Yep. And they've got a freshman. I got to include him because he's got a great name. Grady Dick.
Yeah, Grady Dick.
Averaging 14.5 points a game as a freshman. Kansas is their usual terrific team. Kansas State, 19-5. They've got a couple of seniors. Keontae Johnson averaging 18 points and 7.6 rebounds a game. Then they have a real fun point guard, 5'8", Marquise Noel, averaging almost 17 points a game and 7.8 assists per game. Like I said, a 5'8" point guard from Harlem.
They have 3 guys from Harlem on that team. 3 guys from the Big Apple playing in the Little Apple. Anyway, sorry.
Baylor, 17-6. They've got a real good freshman, Keontae George, who's averaging 17 points, 4.5 rebounds, 3 assists per game. They've got senior leadership with Adam Flagler, 15 points a game, 5 assists per game. And they just got back more of a glue guy and one of the best names in college basketball, Chamua Chachua. Just came back the other night. Remember him from the tournament last year. Mm-hmm. Definitely helped. You know, like I said, he just feels like one of those glue guys. Not going to put flashy stats, but is just going to be a solid contributor. Baylor's very glad to have him back. The sixth team, TCU, 17-7. Now, they've dropped through the last 4, but they are missing Mike Miles, who averages 18 points a game. If he comes back in time for the Big 12 tournament and for the NCAA tournament, they're still going to make some noise. They also have some depth. Miller and Ball average 13 points per game each, so they do have a little bit of depth there. On the bubble, I've got 2 teams, and both of them with big wins tonight. Oklahoma State, well, even though it's not so much a big win, they beat Texas Tech, but it was a needed win. It avoided the bad loss in the Big 12. If there is a bad loss, Texas Tech is that loss. Oklahoma State now goes to 15-9. They're 6-5 in the conference. As long as they stay right around 500 in that conference, they're going to be in really good shape to get into the field. West Virginia, like I said earlier, got the win tonight against Iowa State, moves them to 15-9. They've got computer numbers. They're 21 going into tonight in the net and 20 in the BPI. Except for the record, you would think they'd be in already. A couple more wins. They're now 4-7 in the conference. They have a couple of winnable games coming up here. Still some tough road games. So I think they've got six definite, real good chance of 8. The only 2 who are out of it are Oklahoma and Texas Tech. I think that's a summary of the Big 12. A couple of key players to watch.
Yeah, best league in the country by far. You know, it's fun. I mean, you know, they just beat each other up. That's why they get losses. West Virginia is a really good team, and so is Oklahoma State. They just are, and it's a tough league.
Yeah, at least in the top six, you know, the out of the six teams in the top six, I think there's about two bad losses all year. Kansas State lost to Butler, and TCU lost to Northwestern State.
Yeah, that was earlier. Also, that was without Damian Ball. That was without their number two guy. One other thing, just in that league, when Kansas State, Keontae Johnson, if you remember him, he was the guy that was a star at Florida. He collapsed on the court during a game in December of 19, and he was out of basketball for a couple of years. Came back in, playing his last year, so it's good to see this kid getting back. And if you have seen him play, he's built like a brick shithouse. He's 6'6", but he's all muscle. He's a big, strong kid. But this is a kid that collapsed on the court. Obviously, was revived. Couldn't play for a couple of years. Didn't get medical clearance. Finally got clearance this year. Transferred to Kansas State. And is definitely a difference maker for this team. Actually, their backcourt with Noel, who's 5'8 on his best day. He's probably closer to 5'6". And Johnson is the highest scoring backcourt of any of them. And there's a lot of great backcourts. Texas thing, Timmy Allen plays bigger than his size. He's 6'5", but he plays pretty big. Texas is good. Texas is really good.
Yeah.
I get the crappiest conference of the two. Three, I should say. I get the Pac-12. There's a league of two teams.
Are they a power conference, though?
They are not a power conference.
They are listed as a power conference, but they are not. The Mountain West is a far better league than this one, by the way. The conference has a big two and everybody else. Let's be honest with you. UCLA and Arizona are locks. You know, they're really 5 and 9 in the net, respectively. They're not going anywhere. USC to me is the 13 that'll get in. They're 17-6, 52 net. You know, then you go down. Oregon had a nice win last week, but they're still 14-10. A lot of work to do. Utah's 15-9. Brutal loss at home last week against Stanford. Can't do that. Arizona State is 16-8, but they lost at home to Oregon last week. So it's really kind of topsy-turvy. The thing about UCLA that makes them great is that there's a bunch of names that you've heard a lot of. Jaime Jaquez has been there for about 17 years. He's averaging 16 a game with 7.7 rebounds, 2.5 assists, 1.7 steals. Just fills up the stat sheet, does everything right. Tiger Campbell is the other guy you've heard of forever. And it's all because a couple of years ago in the NCAA tournament, they had that run. And every game was close, and every game that they played was probably the best game of the round. Every game, and you watched them just take the air out of the ball and play great. Tiger Campbell, 13.2 points, five assists a game. Jalen Clark, 13 points and almost 7 rebounds a game, and 2.6 steals a game. You know, Singleton's there, and Amari Bailey and Adam Boner, the other guys, they average between 8.5 and 10.3. Boner also averages 1.5 blocks. Bonin and Amari Bailey are freshmen. Singleton's a senior, but he shoots the lights out. He shoots like 44% from three. Arizona, they average 83 points a game. They shoot 49% from the floor. They don't miss much. It's almost like watching an NBA team play when these guys play. They made more free throws than their opponents have attempted. And they out-rebound their opponents by 8 per game, so they're pretty dominant there. They also average almost 20 assists per game. They share the ball really, really well. Turnovers are their big problem. They turn it over about 14 times a game. Tabellus is their best player, averages 21.5 a game. Balo averages 15.9 and 1.5 a game. Kerr Crissa, his first name is Kerr because he was named after Steve Kerr, so there was no real surprise that he ended up in Arizona. He averages 11 points a game and nearly 6 assists. You know, Ramey, who came in from Texas, averages 10 points a game, 3.6 rebounds, 3.3 assists, and Larson averages 9.8 points and 4.5 rebounds a game. So this is a team that has a lot of balance. Everybody can score, and they play really well. USC is the other team, 17-6, 9-3, okay, in conference. Their big loss was, unfortunately, the Florida Gulf Coast, easy for me to say. But they have wins over UCLA and Auburn. They shoot about 46% from the floor, so it's not bad, and they hold their opponents under 39. They struggle from three. They don't even hit a third of their threes, and they don't rebound well. Boogie Ellis is their guy, transferred from Memphis, 16.5 points, 3.7 rebounds, 2.9 assists, and a steal and a half a game. And Drew Peterson, who seems like he's been there forever, averages 14.2, 6.6, and 4.7. Trey White also gives you a 10-5. This is a team that's got a lot of good play out of their stars. They don't get much out of their bench. They have a guy named Kobe Johnson who kind of does it all. He averages 8 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals. So he fills the stat sheet. Every other team, Utah, Oregon, Arizona State, need to do something special against big teams the rest of the way and in the Pac-12 tournament to me to get in. Nobody else is even considered. So that's the Pac-12 in a nutshell. I'd go deeper, but there's no reason to go deeper. These other teams aren't that good. I mean, you guys had, your Big Ten's going to get from 6 to 9. The Big 12 is going to get from 6 to 8, you know, so it's a totally different feel. Just one thing to touch on, though. Oh, go ahead, Kev, you first.
We'll give you the Mountain West next week.
Oh, thank you. Well, it's a league I follow, so it's not bad. Just because, Joe, everybody understands how weird this college basketball season is. Teams that are in danger of not making the tournament. Villanova most likely will not. North Carolina, the preseason number one, has lost 3 in a row. They are no lock to get in. Syracuse, in trouble. Florida State will not get in. Louisville will not get in. Michigan, in serious trouble. Wisconsin, serious trouble. Ohio State will not get in. Kentucky, Michigan State, Duke, they're not locks yet either. These are the schools that are wide open, okay? These are schools that are perennially in this tournament. They're opening up spots for other schools and teams like Rutgers, like you talked about before, Gino. You know, teams like Oklahoma State fighting, like you mentioned, Kevin. I mean, these are the schools that usually own these tournament bids. Maybe one of them doesn't make it every year. Now, all of a sudden, it looks like, I mean, Nova's got no shot unless they win their tournament. You know, Syracuse, almost the same thing. They probably have to get to the final of theirs. So, I mean, they had to come back tonight against Florida State, who's really bad. So, it's a really topsy-turvy year in the wonderful world of college basketball. G?
All right.
Kev's got a point.
Yeah, I know we don't talk women's basketball at all. I just watching ESPN, just one thing at the bottom. UConn lost tonight, their second straight loss to the women. First time since March of 1993 they were on a losing streak. That's incredible. A 30-year run of dominance.
Gino Auriemma.
Yeah. That was it. Just something flashed up. I thought it was interesting.
No, listen, there's a lot of interesting things that go on in women's college basketball. The problem, unfortunately, is that it's still a very, very top-heavy sport. You kind of know who's going to win 99% of the games. Yeah. That's the only problem with it. Like, the Big Ten has a couple of teams that are decent, and the SEC obviously is the premier league, with led by the South Carolina Gamecocks, Kev. But everybody, it's
I didn't even mention that UConn's loss
to the South Carolina was the first one. Absolutely.
And they lost to Marquette tonight, I think it was.
You know, and Marquette, you know, is not as good as Villanova in that league. No. It's topsy-turvy all over the place.
Yep.
But I pass it back to my friend Gino.
All right. That's college basketball for right now. Anything else we want to talk about? Darren, got a couple of things?
Well, I wanted to touch on Pebble Beach. Listen, it's a course. It's public. We could all play it if we had $1,000. You know, it's a course that's known for wind, that was suspended for wind and weather on Saturday. That's how bad it was. Justin Rose ended up winning on Monday. First time he's won a PGA Tour event since the 2019. I didn't realize it had been 4 years. It was January 19th. I had no idea. I was stunned by that. But I just love watching that course. I love watching the wind whip and seeing the ocean on the side and watching these guys try to hit that 100-yard par 3 and not know exactly what to do with it with the wind. It's a great tournament. This week you had the Waste Management Phoenix Open. So you're starting to get better and better tournaments as we go forward. And, you know, we'll be leading up to the Masters soon, which we all enjoy watching. So that'll be really cool. Kev?
Yeah, there's no louder hole than the 17th at the Waste Management.
Oh, it's awesome.
They set up the grandstands going surrounding the par 3. The golfers encourage the fans to get loud. It's the party hole on the PGA Tour.
It really is. It's a fun hole to watch. Nobody talks about it because it's played in freaking February, but it's a great
Super Bowl weekend.
It really is. It's a great hole. It really is. It's kind of fun. I mean, there's certain ones that stand out, like all of Amen Corner stands out. You know, the Island Green that's you know, stands out. There's certain ones, but this hole doesn't get talked about enough. It's fun.
Well, you know what? If you're sick and tired of 7 hours of Super Bowl pregame show, flip it on for a couple minutes.
You'll enjoy it. Trust me, you'll enjoy it. The other thing I wanted to touch on was just horse racing because we brought it up last week. We had let me just see what we had here. Hold on 1 second. I lost my place for a second. Oh yeah, okay. Last week was the Holy Bull. Okay, Holy Bull. We had a slight upset. Rocket Can won the race with Alvarado aboard. Billy Mott was the trainer on that horse. It was 5-2. Wasn't really an upset, but the heavy favorite was Cyclone Mischief. Didn't even finish in the top five. Finished a well-beaten seventh and had a good trip. So Rocket Can will be a horse that you'll see. Came in a little bit off the pace. Wasn't like a dead closer, more of a stalker. This week you got the Withers, okay? Used to be a much bigger race than it is now. But early favorites are Arctic Arrogance and Hit Show. It's only a six-horse field. Arctic Arrogance is 7-5. Hit Show is 8-5 right now. Arctic Arrogance is the son of Frosted. He's got Lascano aboard, Linda Rice training it. In his five races, 2 wins, 3 seconds, and always part of the race, always part of the pace, I should say. And he's a gray, so you can always find him around the course, just like his father Frosted was. Hit Show, son of Candy Ride, Manny Franco and Brad Cox are the is the team. Won 2 of his 3 starts, but he races off the pace. So I thought this race was interesting because you got a horse that's going to set the pace and a horse that comes from off of it. You're going to be able to see who controls that. We're getting closer and closer to the Derby where these big races come out. Neither of these horses are the favorites right now for the Derby, but they are horses to look at. A couple other races this week that I don't really know much about. You have the El Camino Derby at Golden Gate, and you have the Sam F. Davis at Tampa Downs. They both accumulate points for the Derby as well. But that's where we sit with Kentucky Derby talk.
Okay.
Gino, back to you.
That's it. I don't have anything else. Are we ready to wrap? Do you guys have anything else?
Kev?
Oh.
All right.
All right, let's hope we have a good Super Bowl.
Exactly. So, again, we are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Darren. I'm here with Kevin. I'm here with Gino talking about the world of sports with you guys the best we possibly can. One of the things we were talking about before the show is how long a week is because the things that happened last Thursday and the things we try to remember on Tuesday and Wednesday as we're prepping are real exciting for us. But we hope you enjoy the show. If you have any comments, thoughts, cries of hysteria, whatever it is that you want to say, please let us know. Answer our Facebook post, share things. If we post something that you like, we'll be posting a lot more stuff upcoming real soon. You can download us anywhere you download your podcast, whether it be an Apple product, TuneIn, Spotify, wherever you get your stuff. But really what we want is more feedback from you guys. We want to get the show out there as much as we possibly can. So listen to us, write us, tell us, talk to us. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.
This has been the Sports Kings from Queens.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.